the Diamond Discussions Podcast.
Hey guys, and welcome back to another episode of the Diamond Discussion Podcast alongside my co-host Joe Stumpo. I'm Mike Caliendo. Now, I know we have promised you guys no more hiatus, but it has happened again. Unfortunately, I got sick and then Joe got sick, and it was just as soon as I was finishing up and was almost done with this cold that I had, then Joe got it. So
yeah, it was it's been a wild 3 weeks. Yeah. You were just coming over it. I was just coming over it. Some type of upper respiratory thing we had going on. I don't know, but we're alive. We're back on the saddle and we're ready to go. Because there's been a lot going on. There's been a lot going on. A lot of baseball that has been played. A lot of question marks too, and some deep digging into both of our teams, obviously, when it comes to playoff seeding and the playoff picture. And what to expect. So if you want to lead off with your Mets, we could do that first.
I know
we got to do. Yeah.
We got to answer the trivia question.
I was about to say, we got to do the trivia, but we'll lead off with your Mets. But once I do this trivia from a month ago, if anybody remembers. So the trivia from the last episode was, what player was traded at both the 09 and 2010 deadline and was able to make it to the World Series? That was actually asked by our good friend Brew. He was a guest on our last show, two shows ago, before we had released our short series. So the answer for that was Cliff Lee. He was traded at the 09 deadline and made it with the Phillies, and then was traded to Texas and made it with Texas and made the World Series in 2010. So Cliff Lee was the answer for that. We'll be dropping, obviously, a trivia question at the end of this episode. But, Mike, I know you've seen some tough baseball. I'm not going to say the Yankees haven't been playing tough baseball, but it seems that the Mets have really been inconsistent the last 6 to 8 weeks. They just lost 3-4 to Miami. Where is your head right now in terms of how this team is playing?
You know what? I'm constantly going back and forth with this team because, okay, they sweep Philly. And up until we got to that series, even with you guys, we were both almost neck and neck of playing awful baseball for the last, I don't know, month and a half, give or take, since our last episode, basically, even before that. Both teams were absolutely putrid. And for your sake and my sake, it was easier on each other because both teams were terrible. So
Right. Really
no fan base could point and laugh and say, ha-ha, you guys suck. So that was one thing, I guess, that was decent. But for at least it kept things at bay. For at least for me, with what
it brought us together, actually.
Yeah, it was, you know, listen, we're both struggling.
We both suck.
Yeah, let's hold hands and jump into the fire together. That's
right, exactly
how it was. No, but realistically at this point, I don't want to say I'm fed up, but I'm very upset because where I'm at now, all right, you have potentially the series of the season when you sweep Philly, and that team looks lost at Citi Field. I mean, you got Alec Bohm pointing to microphones in center field saying, I can't see. Those have been there for years, but whatever. So complaining about that, that team looks lost when they're at Citi. And the Mets just have their number right now, and they pretty much just own anything Philadelphia. And congratulations, you can beat Philadelphia. Doesn't seem like you could beat anybody else. I just, you can't have a series like that and then follow up with 3-4 and lose to Miami. That's just unacceptable. Because now all that ground that you just made up, that series sweep of Philly, you just gave it right back. And we're back to square one. That series meant absolutely nothing. Please help me understand not what was the point. I get the point, because if they would have got swept, we might be having a different conversation. And not for nothing, thanks Cincinnati for not playing good baseball over the last couple of weeks. Because if they were on it, if they won just 3 or 4 more games, the Mets might not even be in the playoff picture right now. So thank them for completely almost falling off a cliff as well. But if this team is going to make a run in the postseason, I mean, when are we getting it together? When is it going to be together? When I've been searching for it all season. The pitching and the hitting comes together and does it right at the same time. You know what they've done at the same time? Both been atrocious. When the pitching staff seems to go pretty poorly in the beginning of the season, the hitting was carrying the load, and vice versa. Now, the only thing they can get right is when both are off and they do it at the same time. And the David Peterson start yesterday. I mean, what was that? I don't know. He gives up 8 runs. I mean, I know he wore a Kobe glove, so maybe that was his honor to Kobe, giving up 8 runs. And, you know, with Kobe wore number 8. I mean, what is that? Seriously, what is that? That was the worst start of his season so far, and I understand that those things happen, but not now. That is right. Unacceptable. Kodai Senga, where are you? You're like your ghost pitch. You're a ghost right now because where are you? What are you doing? You have a 6 ERA in your last 9 starts. You know who's pitching well for this team? The rookies, McLean, Tong, the guys that just got here. Are they going to be the ones that is going to carry this team into the playoffs? If that's the case, don't you think that's a little pathetic at this point?
It's not that it's pathetic. It's more scary than pathetic. It's, you know, the rookies that they're just coming up, they strike gold a little bit early, right? That's kind of a good thing. You want that to happen, but you know, you got to tell a guy like Nolan McLean to go give you 6 or 7 innings in Philadelphia in the playoffs, or in LA, right, or in San Diego, or wherever you're going to be playing. That's tough on a kid that just got here. You know what I mean? Agree. Especially for a kid like Jonah Tong. And now we were just talking about this off air. They, you know, the media was talking to Mendoza at the end of today's game, and I'm not sure who it was from what faction or whatever, but they said, listen, I know this is going to be a tough question, but bear with me. How much longer are you going to go with Kodai Senga? And that took me back a little bit, because I know he's been struggling his last 8 or 9 starts. I get that. But when it comes to how much longer are you going to go with, he's your number one guy right now. What would be the move if he's not pitching well in the next couple of weeks? I know Mendoza had answered the question and said, well, we got to try to get him right, and we're going to have that discussion. Well, if he doesn't have a good start next start, are we going to see a guy like Sproat come up this month and maybe take his place? I know they wanted to go 6-man rotation. I mean, what are they going to do if Senga doesn't pitch well?
So, no, Sproat wouldn't be a part of the equation, because right now they're going to run a 6-man in their span of – they still don't have a day off, I think, until the end of the week. So they're going to run the 6-man. That's why Tong is going to get another start. You know, he announced that after his start the other day, which he looked, I don't want to say fantastic, but he looked very good. I was very happy with what I saw. You and I were actually at that game together. The first time we went to a game as fans together. Yep. Diamond Discussion took over City Field. Well, we took over 2 seats and maybe the ice cream stand. But regardless, we were there. And you and I both said it at one point that, you know, I'm sorry to sidetrack, but Tong, that kid is a psychopath on the mound, and we love
him. He's definitely a competitor.
Love it.
He's definitely.
As far as Senga goes, I didn't mean to sidebar that, but I had to. No,
that's okay. That's so, okay.
So, like I had mentioned, his last 9 starts, he's got a 5.90 ERA and 39.2 innings pitched. He has 24 walks and a WHIP of a 1.68. If this guy is your ace and your catalyst and your guy to look at, you know, for a start that I'm in a must-win game, those are not the numbers to do it. And I have defended Kodai Senga time in and time out. I love the guy. I love what he's capable of. Something is not right. Could it be that he's still lingering from the injury from, you know, the hamstring running to first base, the Alonso throw? We all remember that. Could that still be a factor? I mean, maybe. That's not out of the realm of possibility. Things like that, especially in the legs for a pitcher, that could linger. Maybe he's dealing with that, but I'm not trying to make excuses for him. If that is the case, then he should have stayed out a little longer, but I can understand the competitive mentality. You want to be on the field. You feel that your 70% is better than this guy's 100%, and that's no disrespect to a teammate. That's just a competitor in you, so I can respect that to a degree, but when you're starting to hurt the team, your 70% is not better than maybe the next guy. So as far as what's going to happen, if Senga does not right the ship, then I think it just gives on more of a leash and or McLean. Right now, I think McLean is not coming out of this rotation. This kid has been spectacular. Bulldog, another, I don't want to call him a psychopath, but what we saw, what we've seen in his first three starts, this kid is seems to be the real deal. I love his attitude on the mound. And if you really just, because I've been, actually been to two out of three of his starts. I was there for his debut, and then I went his following start at City again. If you watch this kid throw and the way he just like almost slows the game down, I feel like he's out there with radio silence. I feel like he doesn't even hear the crowd. He's so locked in and so in the zone. And if you know you guys out there have been watching the highlights, I mean, when he throws that that sweeper, that thing looks like a frisbee. It is disgusting. But that's I think that's what's going to end up happening. I mean, this, who's to say that they don't say, all right, you know what, Senga, you're going to go to the bullpen for maybe a week or so or whatever the case is until he figures out what he's got to figure out, if that's the case. Because right now they're going to run six men, and it's going to be McLean and Tom that are going to command the spots in the rotation at this point.
And like you just said, which I thought was an excellent point, and we had talked about it earlier this afternoon, if the Reds weren't playing like such crap the past 7 to 10 days, this could be the Mets looking on from the outside looking in.
They could be three games out of the wild card.
They could be two or three games out of the wild card. And let me tell you something. If for some reason that the Mets don't make the playoffs this year, I don't know what has to change there. That is a diabolical, complete, I don't know, that's a failure. This team cannot not make the playoffs. They have to make the playoffs. You could not win a World Series, fine. It's so hard to win a World Series, and I don't think a lot of people understand what it takes to go into winning a World Series. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. These fair weather fans, they just think it's like, oh, if you don't win, that's it. It's the end all be all. Listen, right. I get it, but it's so hard. It's really hard. But if the Mets don't make the playoffs, I mean, you got everybody under the sun that you thought you were going to be good enough to actually compete for a title, even with the Dodgers being in the NL and you have to face them to get there. What do you feel that this team would need to do if they don't make the postseason? If they don't make the postseason, I know you're going to be beside yourself. But if that happened, what are you going to do baseball-wise? Do changes need to be made? Does Mendoza get canned? I know it's early. It's his second year. He completely went far beyond his expectations. He exceeded his expectations last year, getting to the NLCS, two wins away from the World Series. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to give him a pat on the back for taking that team from where it was. I think they were 22 and 33 at one point.
Yeah.
And they had a massive turnaround and were able to get there. But now this team, he gets Soto. He gets all this pitching. The pitching was looking great. I know Canning went down. But what do you got to do, Mike, if this team doesn't make the World Series? If this team doesn't make the playoffs.
So, all right, here's realistically where I'm at. There's a lot of fandom in my answer, and then there's going to be a lot of logic behind it. And I've actually, just to throw this out there, I've actually gotten a legitimate, like, real hater of, like, my content, actually. So,
yes.
Some of you's out there, I post a TikTok here and there. I don't post as much as I would like to, I guess. But I do make videos, and I had a fan come after him and basically tell me that I was a
Met fan apologist, was it?
Yeah, that's what he called me, a Mets fan apologist. So my thing is, my thing is, the signing of Juan Soto has put an immense amount of pressure for this team to succeed.
Absolutely. Now,
you know, and also another side note, Steve Cohen, when he first bought the team, didn't really help the situation where we are now, because he basically guaranteed a world championship in the first 5 years. Well, we're approaching that mark, so there's also that pressure to it. I also think he sort of spoke out of turn to an extent of he was going to put the team in the position to do that. And I think he, not completely, but he went about things maybe the wrong way. He thought he could just throw money at every situation and fix it that way. And that wasn't the way. And I think he learned the hard way. Verlander, Scherzer. We all know how this all went down. Right. So with that being said, there were some experiments made, obviously, in the pitching staff. That's where the experiments really were. Clay Holmes, Frankie Montas, which is probably one of the most atrocious signings that they have made. It's the only signing that I genuinely had a problem with. The Griffin Cannings of the world. Here's the reality of it. If you don't think that David Stearns and the rest of these executives and all these guys that have eyes and these baseball minds that are on the Mets farm system didn't say that Sproat, McClain, maybe even Tidwell at the time, even though he just got dealt, and obviously Tong, were going to work their way up and build themselves up to becoming a legitimate contender as far as top prospects within the organization, then, I mean, what do you think? These guys just guess and say, all right, yeah, these guys are going to go out and we'll see what we got. No, there's legitimate scouts and a lot of people behind all this stuff. So I think the experiments of Canning and Clay Holmes and, you know, bringing Minaya back fine, Frankie Montas, they kept everything short and sweet as far as these deals go. The only thing not short and sweet was, unfortunately, Frankie Montas' stay in New York, because I don't think he's ever going to pitch as a Met again. He's going to get Tommy John, and he's finished for the rest of this year and next year. My thing was, and I was having this conversation with my father this morning. We were actually on our way out to the golf course. And my thing was, now, aside from all those pitchers that they did not go and get, the Corbin Burns, the Blake Snells, all those guys, you know, and I know it's the big sexy name, but the Mets, the David Stearns and his team around him has the philosophy that they do not want to sign a guy age 30 and above to a massive lucrative deal, like let's say the Yankees did with Max Fried. I actually did some digging into that, and it's actually not a crazy thought, because I was like, what is this guy out of his mind? How are you not going to sign some of the top pitchers in baseball because of their age? And then I started looking into just the top guys that are signed right now. And 9 out of the 10 are over the age of 30, really haven't accomplished all that much prior maybe to the deals they have. I mean, Garrett Cole's in that conversation. All right, he won a Cy Young. Last year, he missed half the season and really wasn't all that great until the end going down the stretch. And then he sort of found his form. Now he missed this year with TJ, and now you're going to have a 36-year-old Garrett Cole coming off TJ. We don't know what he's going to be. Most of the time, that first season is somewhat of a transition into, you know, what they could be, or what they're right. going to, you know, end up being. Zach Wheeler's another one on that list. Obviously, you know, he just had the blood clot issue. Now, Corbin Burns, he's another guy on that list. He just went down for Tommy John. Blake Snell's another guy on that list. He missed half the season. I mean, you can't predict that these guys are going to get hurt and all this stuff is going to happen. But if you look at history, the way these signings go, not all of them, if not most of them, really don't work out. There's really only been about maybe 3 or 4 that have actually pitched phenomenal in their lucrative deals. So I understand that aspect the more that I dug into it. And I challenge you guys to do so, because it's fairly interesting, to be honest with you, and to understand the method to that madness. But I think when it came to the pitching staff, this is what they were doing. They were experimenting to the degree of, I think we could right the ship with this guy. We like his stuff. We like this guy and his stuff. Talking about maybe Canning and maybe
right.
Montas, which I don't understand that. I still don't understand that. And in hopes that these rookies, these prospects were going to find their form, potentially come up throughout the year. There's a reason why these guys were never dealt. They could have traded every single one of these guys. They
absolutely.
Got Garrett Crochet. They could have got whatever they got for these arms, and they chose not to. So they believed in their system. So I understand that. The other thing behind it is David Stearns, Steve Cohen have all said they want to build a sustainable winner. Well, if you're going to keep dumping all your prospects and trying to throw money at the situation like Cohen did the first 4 years, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. If you want to sustain success, I mean, look at the Dodgers. Yeah, they're throwing money at people. They're throwing money at the right people. But in the same time, they have one of the best
farm systems.
Yeah, they have one of the best farm systems in baseball. So you take that product and you say, all right, how could we do that? And David Stearns has his success with that coming from Milwaukee. Because look at a lot of those guys that came up through their system that are attributed to him.
Right.
That, that's what, yeah. His name is attached to. Now absolutely. You get, you know, so it – I understand the pressure. I'm going to be livid as a Met fan. You mentioned it. If they do not make the playoffs this season, I'm going to be livid, because they're coming off overperformance last year, 2 games from the World Series, and now you go sign the biggest fish that they've ever signed and brought into this market, into Queens, who's having a phenomenal year, by the way. That's a whole other story. And you miss the playoffs? That's just not – you bring back Alonso, Lindor. That's unacceptable. The Met fan in me, completely unacceptable. As far as what we're building and what is being built, I understand not completely mortgaging everything to go try to win this year. Because if you go and do that and miss, then what do you have left?
Right, and it's going to be a very, very scarce-looking farm system now, because you trade those four guys, like you just said. What are you doing? If you trade Sproat, McLean, Tong,
McLean and Tong might be the savior of the season at this point.
Absolutely, because if Senga can't, like I said, if Senga's next four starts aren't good, that's a massive problem.
Yes, absolutely.
That's a massive problem, because not only is it a problem, there's a few reasons of why it's a problem. The first one is, this guy's supposed to be, like you had mentioned, your ace, your number one starter, which means he's supposed to get game one of every big series that you guys are in when it comes to the playoffs. And now that's going to be completely eliminated. Who becomes that number one? It's not going to be Manaea. I don't think you could trust Manaea, to be honest with you, right now.
Well, in his biggest start of the season, he pitched against Philly. He pitched pretty well. But, I see what you're saying. But go ahead.
You know, but that's somebody that you want kind of like in the middle of a series, not to start a series.
I agree.
I think that's where the Mets are going to run into a problem, because now what are you going to do? Who becomes the number two? Is it McLean? Is it Tong? Where do you position these guys? Do you hope that you have a 2-1 series lead where you could throw a guy like Tong? Do you want a guy like Tong, who seems his emotions get the best of him maybe a little bit? Maybe he's too emotional. Do you really want him in a game where you're down 2-1 in a series, or down 1-0 in a series, and you need a must win? I don't know. Maybe you go McLean there. Like, now you have to not only evaluate these guys on their stats and how they pitch, but also how much can they take in a big pressure moment? Who's that guy that's going to come up and say, I could give you six innings plus and lock it down and get us a win and really get there? That's where it has to come in. It's like, who's going to step up and be that guy? And that's going to be tough on Mendoza, because if his number one is not going to pan out, he's going to have to pivot and recalibrate and literally reset the entire rotation to figure out how he's going to navigate to the playoffs. And that's going to be scary, because the bullpen hasn't looked all too great. Ryan Helsley's been absolute, for every sense of the word, poop, just to make it PG. I didn't even realize how bad he was until we were at the game.
Yeah.
And I said, wow, his ERA is kind of bloated. And you're like, yeah, he hasn't been good at all since we've got. And I was like, wow, I haven't even noticed it, because it hasn't really been talked about, I guess, as much. But that's a massive issue. If you have top guys out of the pen not performing, then Senga gets moved around. It could be a scary month, honestly, for Mets fans.
Yeah, no, this is definitely a potential disaster. And to answer your other question you threw out there, does Mendoza get fired? I'm going to say probably not. I think for the most part, he has a decent handle on the clubhouse. The guys, the personalities in that clubhouse, I think he's still got a handle on that. I think it's literally just the experimental pitching staff that I guess they went through, and not having a guy like Senga perform over his last almost 10 starts now has, been a massive blow, because, today was one of those games. Going into this season, this series ending, you already lost 2 out of 3 to Miami, and you needed your top guy to give you a win, and he completely failed you. And that has been the problem with him, lately, since he's been back from the injury. So, this is where we're at now, and you need a guy like that. He needs to be your stopper. Like for the Yankees, for example, if you're going into a little bit of a skid, you want your top guy. You want Max Fried on the mound, because you trust him to stop the skid and stop the slide. And Senga is not doing it. Right now, it's only been 4 starts between the two of them, 3 by McLean and 1 by Tong. But they seem to be the guys that are going to own this pitching staff right now. So, what are we doing? It needs to be figured out. Whatever Mendoza needs to do to go figure out his stuff with Senga and get him straight and get him right has to be done now, as soon as possible. If not today, it needed to be done yesterday. So, they got to figure it out here.
And it also is going to put pressure on Manaea, because now Manaea becomes the number one.
It's going to. Kids really just light the world on fire, and McLean and Tong dominate. If that's the case, then how do you ignore the hot hand?
Right, no, and you're 1,000% right. You're going to have to go with the hot hand. You're going to have to go with the guy that's been giving you the best stuff. length as well. You don't want guys pitching five innings in the playoffs. Listen, I understand it happens, but you do kind of want your pitchers to go six to take the pressure off your bullpen and not have to get 20 outs in a playoff game. You know, you don't want, you know, it becomes a very scary thing if your bullpen is trying to get, you know, 15 outs, 12 to 15 outs early in the game, early in a series. You don't really want that. But like I said, if the Mets starters can go six, that'll really help. But it's who is that guy going to give them that length? You know, obviously you could see a guy like McLean give that length. Manaea, if he needs to, I know he can go six, but he's been, like, his health has been an issue.
Yeah.
You know, if the Mets don't produce offensively as well, that's also going to be a compounded issue because now it's, oh man, we're not scoring runs and we don't know what we're going to be getting from whatever starter from any, you know, at any given time. And that could be just something that you literally could see a snowball effect rolling down the hill and crashing into a mountain. And I don't want that for Met fans. I don't want that for you. I'm a realist. I don't want to see people watching the team and suffering. But it could literally go down that route. This could be a really bad month if stuff doesn't get set handled. And it's going to be, like you said, on Mendoza. If Mendoza doesn't fix this, they're going to limp into the playoffs, man. And you don't want to see Cincinnati get hot and possibly take that last spot in the wild card, because to me, that is just a disaster. That'll be talked about for ages, that this team didn't make the postseason. That'll be a wild thing to have to experience. I just don't want to see that happen, honestly.
Well, I've seen worse. 2008, 2009. I've been there. You know what I'm saying?
But that'll be a reminder almost if that happens. Like, oh man, I witnessed this in 07 and 09.
I'm gonna say 08 or 09 was probably worse. Those collapses in the last month. I don't think anything in my lifetime is going to top that as far as a Mets team. So, like, this is where, you know, I got thick skin as a Mets fan, and that's why I'm not completely, you know, throwing my laptop against the wall or, you know, smashing my chairs. Like, I got thick skin. I've been through it. You know, I 06, the way that season ended, you know, we lost to you guys in 2000. You know, I've been through it all. So I'm not going to put it up there. It could be maybe a top five. Potentially, if I really want to go through all the horrible Mets seasons that I've seen and how they've come to an end in my lifetime. It's just, like I said, the Juan Soto signing has put an immense amount of pressure on this team to make the playoffs. And, you know, look at it this way. Let's say they don't make the playoffs this year. And this is just a what if, but, you know, this is a potential reality with what, again, is being built. Let's say in the next couple of years, they win a couple of championships. You're going to forget all about this.
Yes.
If that's the thing. And the product is, it's almost like a trust the process type of situation where you have more going for you than people seem to realize. You know, the casual, the fan that just looks at this team and doesn't really follow the ins and outs like how we do. You know, you look at those situations and it's like, well, they need to win right now. And that's not always the case. And I'm not trying to make excuses for them because I want them to win a World Series and make the playoffs every single year.
Of course, you know? Of course. But if they don't win, if they don't make the playoffs, though, I feel like next year they'd have to win the World Series.
I mean, it's just more pressure
because now the fan base is going to say, we want to spend more money. I'm telling you, the fan base is going to say, go out and go get pitching. Go out and get starting pitching.
But here's the thing with that.
Tong and McLean are only two guys.
Tong, McLean, Sproat, and everyone forgets about Christian Scott. He had TJ. He was another guy. Came up. He looked good. Everybody forgets that this kid exists. Those are four guys. And then you got Senga for another season. You got Combs for another two. You got Manaea for another two. You have a ton of arms going into next season.
Yeah, but it's also – they're health risks. Manaea is a health risk. Senga is a health risk.
I mean, Manaea doesn't really have a history of health problems.
No, but he's got. Doesn't he have the elbow issue this year?
Yeah, he was, you know, he was banged up this year, fine. But throughout his career, I don't think he's really had that many health issues. I wouldn't say he's a, you know, a chronic IL type of guy. I could be wrong, but I'm gonna look that up as we're talking.
Well,
but
well, this year, literally, you know, if you want to go by this year, it's definitely not been a kind year to him when it, you know, when it comes to the injury bug.
Oh, but of course not.
With a guy like Sproat, he hasn't pitched yet, so we don't know what to expect from him. That's what I'm saying. Next year, if you have him called up, it's just going to be so much pressure on these guys to have to get to the postseason, never mind win the World Series. You know, McLean, Tong, Sproat. Okay, those are your big three. Did you really want to have Senga not work out? Like, no, that's...
Of course not.
He was supposed to be included in the rotation. Like you said, yeah, Minaya's here for another year or two, and you have 2 years of Holmes. At that point, I think we're going to have to figure out and see where Holmes winds up.
All right, so, I mean, as far as Clay Holmes goes, he has been a bit of a pleasant surprise. I know I was pretty high on him going into the season. I didn't think this experiment was necessarily going to fail. I don't think it has. You know, his walk rate has been an issue. I understand that. It always was with him. But, you know, listen, there are some top guys in baseball that have higher walk rates, and, you know, it is what it is. And I think he'll obviously find that the longer he goes as a starter. I mean, this is only – we're not even done with year one yet of him being a starter. And, again, I'm not really all that disappointed what I've seen. I think he's almost exceeded expectations for me because, as you know, Mikey Optimism was about Clay Holmes. You know, he's pitched fairly well. I mean, he's up there in ERA throughout the season. I mean, he's the last I looked, he was 29th in baseball. And this is a guy that's supposed to be your number four. I mean, realistically, if the odds would have everything correct, I mean, you're talking 60 guys that should be ahead of him. If you're talking one, two starters from every team, maybe not 60. I mean, the Rockies and the White Sox. And,
right, know, yeah. How that goes.
But you get my point. You know, if he's a number four, like I said, his ERA, his numbers, they're not all that terrible. At this point, he's not giving you a crazy amount of length. I think he's coming to the end of his limit here as a starter and being stretched out. So, you know, I do think he eventually does go to the bullpen. I don't know if it's going to be in season because now we have the Kodai Senga problem. And if Senga doesn't right the ship when they go back to a five-man, if they do, you know, unless the six-man thing seems to work out for Kodai, you know, maybe Senga's the one that goes. I don't know what they're going to do now because now this is – you know, this is really putting a monkey wrench in your issues because the staff has already had plenty to deal with. I mean, it was almost maybe addition by subtraction with the way the guy pitched when he came back, but not having Montas to start the year. Minaya didn't start the year. He came back more than halfway through. You know, Canning went down, who was pitching fantastic. I didn't think that was going to last. You know, he was going to eventually, you know, hit a wall at some point. You know, but this is not what you need right now. And, you know, you mentioned about them potentially limping into the playoffs. At this point in time, listen, there's a month left of the season. Right now, that's what it looks like. So they have a month to figure this out. They have a month left to get their best baseball together and get it right for the playoffs. And now, you know, another thing, I'm not really too big on limping into the playoffs. But if that gets them in, it gets them in, and you never know what could happen once you're in. You know, the tournament, it's a whole different ballgame because they got in last year. They were one of the best teams in baseball when they got in, and everybody was writing them off. You know, everyone wrote them off to not make it in to begin with. They thought Atlanta and Arizona were going to leapfrog them and make it in. And then no one thought they were going to get past Milwaukee. Nobody thought they were going to get past Philly. And I'm sure everybody thought that the Dodgers were going to steamroll them. And they went to six games with the best team in baseball, the team that won the championship. So you never know what's going to happen when you get in. You really never do. They could right the ship. I mean, all it takes is just a silly little hot streak, and the whole thing changes. And initially, I thought coming out of that Philly series, I thought this was it. I thought this was the turning point. And to me, they just completely went right back to where we were. So now they got a huge series with Detroit. They're going to avoid Scooble. I really almost thank God that that's happening because I think that's the last thing that they need. They got a huge series with one of the better teams in the AL. I mean, if you're going to make a run here, you're potentially looking at this team. We might meet you in the World Series. You know, Detroit is not really an outside shot to make it. They're one of the best teams in the American League. You Absolutely. Have to take every series going forward is almost playoff baseball at this point. You got to put your big boy pants on and get things together because this is insane.
And this is the best team in the American League. So,
yeah,
this is a big test, 100% big test. But now when it comes to the American League, switching over to the Yankees, I have to say, me and you were talking about this earlier. There's definitely been a little bit of an injustice when it comes to the handling of Anthony Volpe.
Big time.
Listen, I know that there's really no other answer other than Caballero right now to play the position. So it's like, what do you do? Do you play Caballero full time? I know maybe it's not a full time thing, but it should be full time for now. I do think Anthony Volpe should have been sent down.
Totally.
Watching the game today, I think he did get another two hits, and the announcers are acting as if he's back. I don't know how two games can.
Who's back?
Anthony Volpe.
Back to being what?
I don't know. That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Back to being what? The guy is actually hitting less than I weigh. What are we talking
about? He was so in the series against Chicago, he was 2-for-3. He was 2-for-4 with 3 RBIs in game 2. Yesterday he went 1-for-4 with an RBI, and today he went 1-for-3. So he got a hit in every game that he played, but those 4 games aren't going to make up for the other games that he's been absolutely atrocious in. He actually did make an error in one of these games as well. His defense still is not there. I don't know what happened to his defense. We're approaching 20 errors on the season, which not only leads the league, but leads all shortstops. What is it going to take for this kid to get right? And I had said a couple of weeks ago when he was really doing bad, I'm talking about he was 1-for-38, and we haven't had a player struggle that bad since Jason Giambi in 2004. Okay, so that's we're talking 21 years of Yankee baseball when no one has had that bad of a stretch, and the Yankees actually had Joey Gallo. I just want to point that out there.
Wow.
Joey Gallo
catching a stray. I live for it.
So even Joey Gallo being a Yankee, he never went through a 1-for-38 streak, and he's a career 200, maybe even less hitter. So that goes to show you how bad Anthony Volpe's been.
Yeah.
When it comes to the defense, I just don't know how your defense can decline in the prime of your career. You're known for your defense. You're known for your versatility. You're known for your agility to go left and right. And you're literally struggling, and it doesn't get any better, it seems. And it's very concerning that this team is going to be in the playoffs with a guy playing the toughest position in the infield who can't field this position. I'm at a loss for words when it comes to this. And like I said, the Mets very abruptly sent down Francisco Alvarez, Luis Angel Acuña, and they said, you got to get right.
Yeah.
Figure it out, get right, come back and start producing. And the Yankees had every opportunity to do that, and now they can't. It's too late in the season to do that. It doesn't make any sense. They should have did it in July. They could have called them up in the middle.
The addition of Caballero. That should have been it right then and there.
Who's been hitting 340 as a Yankee?
And he was long overdue for a minor league assignment before Caballero got there. And then and if you didn't have an answer at shortstop and you didn't have anybody to play the position due to injury and everything else, I can understand and respect the issue that way you were. But you're doing this kid a disservice. And, it's not even a point that, I don't think he's this bad. I genuinely don't think he's this bad. He's not. He's pressing isn't even the word. You're watching this kid play ball, and you're watching him trying to make something happen when he does not need to. He's just got to play the position as is. He's got to make smart baseball decisions. And I think that everything has gone on, his struggles in the field, his struggles at the plate, is pushing him to try to force and make something happen to say, I belong here. He's got to cool it down. And the only way for him to do that is not at the major league level right now, because the fans are tearing this kid apart. The media is tearing this kid apart. It's all over the place. He's probably tearing himself apart more than anybody else could, because as a competitor, that's what you do if you care. He should have been sent down. And the thing was, you know what? When you got Caballero, there was your answer. Volpe goes down, give him a couple weeks, figure it out, get himself together, get himself right, get his head right, and then bring him back up. Because Caballero is not just a shortstop. He can play all over the place. He can play in the outfield, play all over the infield. That kid is very versatile. And the other thing that works out for you is, let's say the Volpe experiment does essentially fail going into maybe next season. You got Caballero going into pre-arbitration this coming off season. So you're going to have him for the next couple of seasons. So you at least have somewhat of a bridge if Lombard is going to be your shortstop of the future, where there's now a little less pressure on Lombard to come up, because now you got third and short somewhat locked up, but not locked up to the point where you're blocking Lombard, because Caballero could go anywhere.
Right.
So you
that's a good point.
You know, yeah, so you have options. I'm sorry. It's just Volpe should have been sent down, and they are ruining this kid. And it's a shame to see it, because this kid is a competitor. You know, we have friends around baseball that have met and dealt with him and have nothing but great things to say about him, his personality. And it's a shame that you see things like this happen. And it's, to me, it's the organization that is at fault. They should have done this kid right. If you want him to be what everyone expected him to be, or whatever it was, you should have done the right thing by this kid.
Yeah, and you know, to piggyback off what you were saying, if they would have sent him down a month ago, that would have gave him a month to get right, and he could have came back now and started producing. Now you can't do that. Now you have to hope that he's going to pick it up from where he left off in this series, which he did play well. He offensively did pretty good, and that's what you want to see, right? But he did make an error at short, and there was nobody on. It was a ball just hit to him, and he muffed it. Not for nothing, it's not like he's making errors and nothing's happening. He's making errors, and they're big errors, and they're extending innings. They give extra at bats. Your pitcher has to make more pitches. And it seems to when that's when the tires fall off. It's not like he's just making this error and his pitchers get out of it, you know, no harm, no foul. No, it's actually going further than that. So it's hurting this team in multiple ways. So it's like Aaron Boone, Brian Cashman, when you guys are sitting together and you guys are talking about the development of Anthony Volpe, what actually comes to mind? Like, when you guys talk about this kid, doesn't the longevity of his career mean anything? Are we just going to let this kid stay at the major league level and potentially rot and not get the proper help? Do we think this is the proper help? Running him out there every day, giving him two games off? He needed to be off for five games. He needed a full week off to maybe reset, maybe connect with his teammates a little bit more, be in the dugout and be a leader that way. You know, because we're not even asking him to be a leader. We're just asking him to be a piece of this team. But he could have stepped up in a different way and maybe, you know, been in the dugout and been able to talk with the veterans and maybe, you know, chip at their brains a little bit and, you know, figure it out that way. He needed some type of mental reset. That's all I could say at this point. And he didn't get that with getting 2 days of rest.
No.
Two days of rest is not going to fix the issue. So, like I said, in July, they had every opportunity to send this kid down, fix him, literally do what the Mets did, and then maybe they could have, you know, had something there. But now they can't do that. It's too late. So,
I agree.
You know, what does this mean for 2026? I don't know. If this happens in 2026 again, where he's hitting 206, 207, and he's making 15 to 16 errors, realistically, he's not going to be a Yankee.
No.
He's setting himself up for not being a Yankee, and Yankee fans have to realize that. They're saying, what about moving him to second base? I don't think moving him to second base is smart, because you got Chaz Chisholm.
So, I mean, now just imagine this. The Yankees get into the playoffs, and Anthony Volpe costs you a series. The series ends because of an Anthony Volpe error. The fan base is going to call for this kid's head, and he will never be able to step foot in Yankee Stadium ever again. Not as
forget a Yankee. Forget a series. If he costs you a game, it's going to be over for him.
Yeah. And
a you series, know, if he costs you a series, you got to move out of the state.
Yeah, he's got to, you know,
if you're the sole reason to blame for losing a series, you better just pack up in the middle of the night. Don't even say goodbye to anybody and just get the hell out of Dodge.
Witness protection. You know, noodles and ketchup. Like noodles
I was literally about to say noodles and ketchup. But yeah, I mean, if you're going to be the sole reason, just get the hell out of New York. If you're going to be the reason we lose a game, the fans are going to be there right behind you, letting you know that you're the reason you lost. So Brian Cashman is also going to be looked at. And Aaron Boone are also going to be looked at as guys that could have been the reason he got sent down and the reason he got the extra help. And because he didn't, now he's costing your team games. And that's the fans are going to know that. The fans see that now.
Yeah. Well, everybody sees it. And you know, a lot again, it's I think some of the casuals, this guy's got to go. I wouldn't say that just yet. Like I said, the organization did this kid wrong and completely at this point have just been setting him up for failure. We both agree he should have been sent down. But to the point I made earlier where this kid is trying to make something happen, I also feel like he's so in his head, he can't even think straight. Because if you want to go back to that Boston series, you know, they were losing the game going into the ninth inning. They were down, I think, 4 or 5 runs, and then ex-Met Paul Blackburn completely imploded and gave up 7 runs. Right. But Volpe was in the middle of that, and there was a ball hit to him by David Hamilton, I believe, the speedster on Boston. Right. And he made a dive and play. I'm going to be honest with you, even if he doesn't struggle a bobble with that ball and he comes up clean after the dive, I still don't think he gets Hamilton. The other thing was, if you really look at it, I know he was wearing sunglasses, and you and I spoke about this the day that it happened. He originally looked at second base for Jazz Chisholm because I think he knew that Hamilton was coming down the line. And this kid is a speedster. I mean, how do you not know? And he saw Jazz wasn't there to make a throw to second, and then just, I got to make something. I got to do something. And then just launch the ball to first base. I think as the ball was leaving his hand, Hamilton had already crossed the plane to first base. So that's where he's not there mentally. And I can't stress it enough. The organization is not doing this kid any favors for his development, for anything. I mean, is there someone in the organization that just doesn't like this kid? I mean, you're running him into the ground. You could potentially put this kid at a point of no return. Because if he continues to do this and bury himself mentally and everything, I mean, what are we going to talk about here? Volpe not being a Yankee.
Well, the crazy part is that you're saying that someone hates him. I think they actually love him. And I think they actually think that they're doing him justice by keeping him out there.
Absolutely not.
Then what is the excuse that he is still at the major league level?
I don't know. You don't have an answer. Before Caballero, maybe you just legitimately didn't have somebody to play the position every day. And that could have been understandable, and I could have gotten that. But it's just about a month, if not 8. It's a month exactly since you've gotten Caballero. So there is no excuse. You have somebody that can play the position every day. And I'm genuinely getting sick and tired of – now, I know a lot of Yankee fans want Boone gone. That's not going to fix anything. I'm sorry. It's just not.
No. And we had this conversation at the Met game.
Yeah. That is not going to fix everything. There is a bigger problem than Boone, because if Boone goes and their philosophy remains the same, you're going to get the same exact thing with a different personality. Maybe he's a little nicer. Maybe he's a little more aggressive. But at the end of the day, it is the philosophy behind the organization, and that is the biggest problem. Getting rid of Boone is not going to solve your problem. And here's a prime example. Caballero maybe a week ago, went 3-for-4, hit a home run or two or a double, whatever it was. Next day, he's not in the lineup. Why?
Right.
Analytics told you not to. It doesn't make sense. There is a time and a place. Clint Frazier was on a podcast, and he said, I can go 55-for-55, and analytics will tell me that I'm not on a heater. I'm just doing what I'm supposed to in those moments due to analytics. That is the most asinine thing I have ever heard in my life.
It is, and not for nothing. I think the Yankees don't want to admit that they potentially have messed up when it came to Volpe and the handling of him this year, that they're just going to keep him up. Because if they send him down, it's going to look like they made a mistake. And they don't want to look like they made a mistake. But this is their top guy, and they don't want their top guy to be ruined on a court of themselves.
So you leave him out there to ruin himself, and you're also a part of that? I mean, did the Yankees organization have no responsibility for what happened to Jabba Chamberlain either? I mean, the guy came up as one of the premier relievers in the game, and they said, you know what, let's make this guy a starter. And it completely flopped, and then he was never the same as a reliever. So, I mean, you know, listen, sometimes things just don't work, and it's fine. There's no reason. You can't have pride in this game. I mean, you can. But when it comes to decision-making, you can't do something based off pride. You cannot do that, because pride is not a thing when it comes to decision making, and it comes to, you know, we can't be wrong. We can't show face that we're wrong. What? No, that's unacceptable. That's unacceptable. And that's what your fan base, I think, should be the most mad at. If that's the case, where it's we can't be wrong. What? Everybody's wrong. Everybody's wrong. Guess what? There are Hall of Famers. They're wrong 7 out of 10 times, and they're in the Hall of Fame. This is baseball. You could be wrong. Guys make mistakes throwing a pitch. I should have called for the other pitch. I made a mistake. That was wrong. That's this game. That's the way it is. You can't. That is. If that is true, and if that is any sense of a reality, and someone is actually with that thought process, they should be kicked out of baseball. They shouldn't even be allowed to watch baseball, play the video game at that, or even own baseball cards. If that's your mentality, that's pathetic. If that's real, if that's realistic, I mean, what are we talking about?
No, I know, but they struck gold with Aaron Judge. They struck gold with, you know, Luis Hill has looked good. You know, Cam Schlittler has looked good. And their guy that they drafted high, Anthony Volpe, has not looked good. And I think it angers them. And I think they're leaving him up because they want him to figure out himself at the major league level. And I don't. I think sending him down would, to them, this is just me, my opinion.
Yeah, we're just speculating.
I don't know if this is true. I don't know if it's true, but I just don't think they want to look wrong.
If that's any sense of reality, that is ridiculous, and just that's not a way to run things. I'm sorry.
I think what's skewing everything too is the 19 home runs and the 70 RBIs.
Right. That's you know that'll be the excuse that
if
you know,
he was if driving, he had driving if he running. Had yeah if he had 11 home runs and 55 RBIs, he probably would have gotten sent down. But the Yankees are going to look at it and say, oh, his power and RBI production is there. Okay. Is that the end-all be-all? Because he can't play defense. He struggles to hit a fastball. Every time he's in a count that's favorable to the pitcher seems to win that battle. So what exactly are we doing here? Are we just going to let this kid have to figure it out at the major league level and tell him, if you don't swim, you're going to drown?
That's sick.
Or why not put the swimmies back on and send them out there and tell them, listen, you're going to stay afloat like this. You're going to have to retrain yourself. That's what should be happening.
That's sick. If that's really a thought process, that's sick. And it's actually honestly angering me. I know, again, there's no truth behind this. You know, this is just us speculating.
Yeah.
But if that is true, or if there's any sense of truth behind that and there's any reality to it, that is horrible.
No, that's horrible. I was a guy that said he needs some time off. He needs some time off. He plays too much. They didn't do it.
No.
They weren't doing it.
You know,
finally, a couple of days ago, he gets 2 days off.
And you know what the other thing?
140
the
games
started winning again, so it's almost kind of like put a band-aid on it, where there's another distraction to the Volpe issue, you know.
Right. And then
we're winning games, so mind your business, type of
stuff. And then he goes 1-for-4, he goes 2-for-4. Oh, he's back.
He's what, back.
Because he had one good series. He should
against
be having
the White Sox. Relax.
He should be having that type of series all the time. Then
he's back. Back to what?
He hasn't. It's been inconsistency. Well, you can't make you can't make 18 errors and hit 204 and tell me that you're back.
I mean, listen,
Ryan Rucco said it today on the Yankees.
No, he's back.
The Yankees broadcast. Look, it looks like Volpe's back. Back from what?
It's like when they welcomed back Derek Jeter, and he was like, "Back, I never left."
What are we actually talking about? The man's been struggling all year. It wasn't a 2-week stint of him playing bad baseball. It's been bad baseball since the beginning of May.
Yeah. You know, and there was there was another shortstop in New York history over the last 25 years that was an atrocious hitter, hit one home run every year, was always in September. Ray Ordóñez. But you know what the difference was? Ray Ordóñez was a gold glover.
Right, and you knew what you were gonna get out of him. But that's the thing. Anthony Volpe is supposed to be this 5-2 player. He's supposed to have speed, he's supposed to play defense, he's supposed to have power, RBI production. And the only thing I see is the RBI and the home run production.
Well, he's got his little hop step at first. That's a tool. He strikes out a ton. That's another tool. Errors beyond, most errors by a shortstop, there's another tool. I mean, this is what we're talking about as a 5-tool player.
That's what I'm saying.
That's atrocious. And
struggling to the fastball? Struggling to the fastball? What, what do you mean? What do you mean you're struggling to the fastball? And then when the breaking pitch comes, he's so not even expecting it, he's completely caught off guard. He's overmatched. What exactly are we doing?
I really don't know.
He had four good games against the White Sox. You know what? Let's see what he does against Houston. That'll be a real big sign. That might be a team we play in the playoffs.
He's got to finish this season strong. That average, would you say he's about 208, you said?
I believe he's 210.
210. So if he could bring himself, if he finishes the season strong and finishes out anywhere from 230 to 240, you could say maybe the ship has been he wrecked the ship there.
Absolutely. But he got five hits against the White Sox, and we're talking about how he's back.
He's just got to relax. I mean,
he's not back.
He's got to relax. He really does, and that's a really hard thing to tell somebody that is struggling. Let me rephrase that. That's an easy thing to tell somebody, but it's a hard thing for a person who is struggling to do. That is probably the most difficult things to do, is to try to just slow the game down and calm down and relax while you're struggling, because you're in your head. You're in your head, and everybody sees it. You see it on the field with his play in the field. You see it at the plate with him, and you feel bad because this kid is just being bled out on the field, and it's sad to see. He came up as a Yankee fan. He's a fan favorite. All the girls love him. He's a good-looking young kid. And this is just terrible. I mean, his jersey's, I think, a top five in baseball. I mean, there's love there. The fandom is there for this kid to succeed. I'm not even going to touch the whole, he's the next Derek Jeter. No.
No.
Please, people need to stop saying things like that. Let Anthony Volpe be Anthony Volpe. Enough with the next Jeter, the next this, the next that. I'm tired of that. But, I mean, it really is just a shame seeing the way this is going. And I blame the Yankees organization. I can't even blame this kid anymore because they didn't do the right thing to help fix him.
I'm right there with you. Like I said, mid-July would have been the perfect time to get him sent down. He could have came up right about now. Would have been 4 to 6 weeks in the minors, and he could have sorted out his problems. And it shows,
wasn't even down that long.
It shows that you care.
Yeah. I mean, how old is Volpe? What is he, 24?
Right.
I mean, Alvarez is 22, 23 years old. They sent him down to figure it out. The young kids.
If you play 25 games in the minors just to fix some stuff, that's not a big deal to me. I think the Yankees are making it as if it's this big deal. So, I really do. I really do. Brian Cashman may not want to look like the guy that messed up.
I'll get enough with that.
If you send him down, it's basically said you're admitting that this guy may not be ready. But I agree. It shouldn't make the head that feel.
Who cares?
But
do you want the guy to succeed, or do you want to be right?
Right. You can't hit 210.
Well, look good. I mean, get out of here.
And commit 18 errors. 210 and 18 errors?
Come on, man. I'd rather look atrocious winning than look good losing. I mean, stop it. Enough with that.
Like, what are we talking?
That's sick. Again, if that's real, that's sick.
It could be real.
You better hope not. In reality, there has to be an answer.
If the home run and RBI production was stagnant and not there, this kid would be sent down. But because his RBI production and his home run production and his runs scored and all that, I'm telling you, that's why he's still up. He could run into a pitch every now and then and knock it out of the park. And that, to me, is the only thing that's keeping him up.
I think that's awful.
It's the only way that makes sense, though. It's awful, but it's the only way that makes sense.
Well, you know what? How about we push it to our comment section with everybody out there listening? You know we appreciate you. You know we appreciate your time that you put into our podcast. You know, we put a ton of time into this as well. So we're going to shoot it over to you guys in the comment section with everything that we spoke about. I have one more small topic. It's not really a small topic that I want to get into. Kind of just came into my head, and it won't leave, and I have to ask you something. But like I said, everybody out there in the comment section, with everything that was said, Kodai Senga, the Mets struggles, me yelling about them, optimistic, not optimistic, wherever the hell I'm at in my head, because sometimes I don't even know when it comes to this team, because I want to keep believing, but in the same respect, it's you see what's going on, and it's just it's hard. But you know what? I'm true orange and blue all the way. And as atrocious as they could look at times, I'm still gonna try to find anything to hold on to with this team, and you know, obviously with the Volpe topic, that's been a big issue with the Yankees pretty much just about all season long. Other than that, the Yankees have seemed that they're getting into the weaker part of their schedule. They're doing what they're supposed to. They're beating the teams they're supposed to. They're winning series now. You know, they're riding their ship. So, you know, good for them. I think they're, what, 3 or 4 games now out of first place behind Toronto. They're obviously in a wild card position, you know, so they're holding it together despite Anthony Volpe. But, guys, in the comments, anything you guys want to add or ask or whatever the case is. But before we get out of here for the episode and move on to our trivia question, I just have one question for you, and I have a question for everybody out there listening. It's been a hot-button issue, and it's going to become a very big hot-button issue towards the later part of the season as we're in when it comes to awards and voting and everything along those lines. And this is starting to get a little dicey. AL MVP. Cal Raleigh or Aaron Judge? No bias. Who's your pick?
You know, from the bottom of my heart, I want to say Aaron Judge, because the fact that he's hitting 325, he's going to hit 50 again. He's going to obviously eclipse 100 RBIs. I believe he's got 97 now. The fact that he's still doing that with the average that he does it at.
Mm-hmm.
Is unbelievable. I know he's missed some time in right field. That could hinder his potential winning of the award.
Okay.
I do think Cal Raleigh's going to win the MVP.
Really? Do you think that's right? Do you think it should be Judge?
Do I think it's right? Honestly, no, I don't. And I'll tell you why. Yeah, he's got him beat in home runs and RBIs. Totally understandable. I get that. Plays an extremely tough position, the toughest position in the sport. We can agree with that, right?
Yeah.
Okay. That's all he's got him beat at.
Right.
He's hitting 250 or 240.
Yeah.
So now if Cal Raleigh does wind up winning the award, I think this is what's going to have – it's going to be brought up more, that there should be an Offensive Player of the Year award. Because if you want to give him Offensive Player of the Year, because he broke the catches record, he passed Johnny Bench, he also passed Salvador Perez, he now sits alone. Mm-hmm. That to me is a phenomenal feat, right? It's pretty phenomenal. And it's something that should be rewarded. But with his numbers the way they are, he's not really an MVP. Also, if you take him off this team, if you take him off Seattle, they still have all those pitching pieces. They have Eugenio Suarez, Josh Naylor.
Yeah, they just got those guys, though.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, if Cal wasn't on the team at all,
they might not be in the position they're in. Let's be honest here. So I'm gonna say that. I think they're in playoff contention, and a big part has to do with Cal Raleigh. I get what you're saying, though. Their rotation is disgusting and filthy, and they just added those two big bats. But, I mean, Raleigh's a huge part of them being in the position they're in.
No, absolutely. But they even with that being said, they had so many opportunities to trump the Astros and take over first place in that division, and they didn't.
I see what you're saying.
You know what I mean? So it's like, I know he's a tremendous piece to that puzzle over there in Seattle. I know. You take him away, where are you getting all that production? Mm-hmm. But I feel like with their pitching, they could weather the storm. Now, you take Aaron Judge off the Yankees, this may be a 75-win team.
I mean, the one year that he missed, 60-plus games, they didn't make the postseason. So
they won 82 games. They went 82-80 and missed the postseason. But if he would miss an entire season from start to finish like a Garrett Cole, that team is probably going to win 75 games. Now, that to me is where the difference lies. And I personally think the Mariners could win 83 or 84 games without Raleigh, but the Yankees wouldn't.
Okay.
I don't think they fight for a wild card. I think Seattle would fight for a wild card. So at that point, where does your loyalty, I guess, quote unquote, lie? I think to me it lies with the guy that if you take him off his team would be a complete zero, and that would to me would be the Yankees.
Well, I understand that sentiment, and I'm also in agreement with you as a whole, but me for a different reason. I don't want to take anything away from Cal Raleigh, but like you said, he should not be the MVP. With all due respect to him and the season he's put up probably the greatest offensive season we've ever seen from a catcher. Noted. And it's not unnoticed. And, you know, he took the league by storm. But just because you have a historical season at the position you play does not give you the MVP. You are not the best player in the game in your respective league, at AL or NL. To me, that does not set you apart. Aaron Judge is, and regardless, you know, because people have been asking, well, he hasn't been playing the field the last couple of weeks. So? He is the best offensive player in the American League, if not all of baseball. You can make that argument, and it's a solid, legitimate one. The fact that this guy hits 50 to 60 home runs every year, and his average is above 300, and he's doing things we haven't seen in a long time. His body type, this guy is a giant doing this. I mean, maybe that doesn't play too much into it, but
he just literally passed Yogi Berra's home run.
He's number. Not top five all time as a Yankee, right?
He's top five all time. He just passed Berra. I mean, he's in the league 8 years.
Right. So it's Aaron Judge. I wouldn't say he runs away with it, but if he does not win the MVP again, and Cal does, and it's because he had a historical season at catcher, then why didn't Salvador Perez win it when he broke the record a few years back? That's ridiculous.
That's a great point, but I'm telling you, I really think that he's going to win due to the position that he plays.
So now that's two MVPs that Aaron Judge is going to get robbed of, because he got robbed, what, in 17?
17.
Jose Altuve. The only thing Jose Altuve had over Aaron Judge is that he had beat him in batting average. He had a better average, and he won the batting title. Aaron Judge wiped the floor with him when it came to every other offensive stat, and now you're going to take another MVP away from this guy? Guys, I'm just going to let you know, at some point in time, we are going to cover a lot of these blunders and a lot of these guys that should have won awards, Cy Youngs and MVPs and awards that were stolen from a lot of guys that, you know, could have changed maybe their Hall of Fame standings and where they are, if guys have made it or not. That is something that you and I have discussed off air. You know, so I just wanted to kind of maybe get the ball rolling and get the blood flowing with everybody and piss everybody else off. Like, I'm annoyed because this is, to me, is ridiculous. But we have a month left. I will say this. If Cal, in the next month, which I don't think is going to happen, but he's got to go on a complete tear. If his average jumps from 240, 250 to maybe 270, 280, which I don't see is happening, and Judge kind of falls off a cliff a little bit and brings down to maybe 300, then I could see that being more of an argument. But the fact that Judge is 75 points higher in average and he's hitting the home runs he's hitting, and he missed a little bit of time. He missed, what, about 10, 15 games, whatever it was?
Yeah.
So I'm not going to say coulda, woulda, shoulda. You know, I'm not going to do all that in the 10-game span that he missed. But it's Judge. I'm sorry, it's Judge. Guys, please, in the comments also, this is going to be a hot-button issue, especially towards obviously after the playoffs and we start getting the finalists. We know Judge and Raleigh are going to be two of the finalists in the American League. But out there, what do you guys think? Do you guys think that Judge or do you think it's Raleigh? Either one. I don't necessarily – like, I don't want to say it this way because I don't want to take anything away from Cal, but it wouldn't be the biggest travesty in the world if he does win it. I do get the sentiment.
No. But
again, just because you're having a historical season for the position that you play, with all due respect, does not make you the MVP. It just doesn't.
But I can see it. I can see it happen.
It's going to happen. I'm in full agreement. It's going to happen.
If he sniffs 60, like he ends with like 57 or 58, he's going to win the award.
And Judge hits 59?
Well,
57 or 56? I mean, what are we talking about? But guys, again, in the comments, please give us your thoughts on this potential, MVP controversy that we're going to be heading towards, at the end of the season, just in time for everything to be crazy. Now, as usual, we give you the trivia question that I know you're all dying to hear. Joe actually brought this to me. I love the question because I think it's perfect, because the last time we did an episode, we were teenagers, and it's been so long that we're in our 40s.
Right, yes. That's
how long of a hiatus we took doing an episode. So I just thought this was a perfect question. You guys will understand in a second. There's four of them. We only need three. We're not asking for the world because this is a pretty tough question.
It's a tough question. I'll say that. So,
go ahead, Joe. You take it. It's your question.
So, I appreciate that. Basically, it's named three out of the four players who've hit home runs as a teenager and then have also homered after turning 40. So, like Mike said, there's four, but we're only asking for three. When I asked Mike this, he got one of the guys right. And then I actually would have said the second guy that he said.
Hmm.
But it actually wasn't. I'm not going to reveal that to anyone because I'm just letting you know, I was actually shocked that person wasn't on the list, but then I realized that they weren't a teenager.
Yeah.
When they got called up. So that was the other issue.
And there was one obvious one for me that I should have got, and I just right over my head.
But we're only asking for three out of the four.
Yeah. If you want to give your brownie points or give us a brownie points, whatever, it's like points in whose line it is. Whose line is it anyway? The points don't matter, right? But hey, if you want to give them to us, that's fine. If you want to show that you're a baseball nerd, we'd love to see it. But again, like I said, guys, we apologize for another hiatus, but we appreciate the fact that you are here listening to us ramble and babble about all our stuff and be mad at our teams and everything that they do. You know, we appreciate the love and support that you guys give us. Guys, like always, thanks for hanging out.
This is the Diamond Discussions Podcast.